Several years ago, when we had only three children and they were a good bit smaller, one night after church on a Sunday, we took our kids and met another family and their kids and went out to dinner at one of those places where you don't have to spend much to do that. And we ate and had a great time and shushed the kids repeatedly. And when we were through eating, I decided I'll give the kids a treat. So I go back to the counter to buy dessert. And I'm kind of scratching my head because the lady doesn't do anything to the cash register. You know, she just went and she got what I ordered and she brought it and slid it to me and said, "These are on us tonight." And I said, "What?" She said, they're on us tonight." And as I'm trying to ask, "Why would you give us free dessert?" She said, "Your children are so wonderful. And so we're giving you the desserts." It blew my mind. I mean, for us, it's a normal evening, right? You tell the children, use your inside voice. 16 times per child in the hour. You tell the children, get in your seat. This is not your playground. 23 times per child for the hour. You know, just a normal night. And so it made me wonder what else had happened in that restaurant. And how often it had happened, right? And whether as we approach, the people on staff there go, "Oh no, three small children are coming." Because to them, it was a monumental night worthy of free desserts all around. I don't know. It seemed to us we were having to be on them pretty hard. Now, that encounter reminded me of what all of us have seen many times, and that is that a lot of families are out of control. There are a lot of families where the children are terrorists who run the household with manipulation and extortion. "If I don't get my way, I will punish you." And it works for them. There are a lot of households where the parents are absolutely frustrated and don't know what to do. And if you get around their children, you'd be ready to give out free desserts too. I think it had a lot more to do with other people's children than mine. Do you know the Bible has a lot to say about this issue? Not the desserts, but the children and the families and whether or not they run well and whether or not you have terrorists in your household. Did you know? We got a lot of little guys in the room. Did you guys know that the Bible puts the responsibility for whether or not you behave right on your shoulders? Did you know that? The responsibility for a child's behavior in the Scripture, that's on the child. In Ezekiel 18, verses 2 to 4, it says, "What do you mean by using this proverb concerning the land of Israel, saying the fathers eat the sour grapes, but the children's teeth are set on edge? As I live, declares the Lord, you are surely not going to use that proverb in Israel anymore. Behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the father as well as the soul of the son is mine. The soul who sins will die." Now what that means is that if you're a child in this room and you do something that's wrong, God is going to hold you personally accountable for it. That's how it works. It's your fault and God holds you guilty. Puts the responsibility for your sin on you, not on somebody else. If you blame somebody else, you missed it. If you're bad, you're going to carry the weight. But did you know that the Bible also puts the responsibility for how children behave squarely on the parents, and especially on the father? The Bible commands children to obey their parents, but the parents are the ones teaching them to obey or not teaching them. It's the parents who expect obedience or don't. It's the parents who punish disobedience or who won't. Children continue in disobedience because it's working for them. They embarrass you in public because it's working at home, and now they got more people to extort you with by making you miserable and get their way. And in that situation, God puts the responsibility squarely on mom and dad, but especially on dad. If a father does not make his children obey, he's guilty before God. Of the elders in the church, Paul said to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 4, he must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. Now, folks, that means if a father cannot keep his children under control with all dignity, that he has a serious character problem that prevents him from serving in the leadership of the church. He's responsible for how his children behave. Now, in the typical situation where children are out of control, everybody's pointing at someone else, and usually across the generation gap, right? Here's how it goes. It's not my fault, it's the other person's fault. And the blame shifting works this way. The parents are pointing at the kids, saying, it's not my fault, that one is strong-willed. And the kids are pointing at the parents, saying, it's not my fault, that one is unreasonable. But God does just the opposite of that. He puts the responsibility on everybody. If a household is out of control, the children are guilty, the parents are guilty, especially the father is guilty, everybody's guilty before a holy God who set this system up and told you how to live in it. Now, people hate this idea of guilt because they overlook the hope that exists with guilt. Most people miss it. There's a lot of hope in guilt, but most people miss it. Think about where the excuses take you. One of the excuses that a lot of people use if their household is out of control is to say that it's just that way with kids. Several weeks ago, I saw someone I hadn't seen in a couple of years, and he said, have your girls gone crazy yet? And I said, no. And he said, they will. And I said, you know, they don't have to. But he was saying, it's just the way it is. It's not my fault. It's just the terrible twos. It's just the terrible teens. There's always something to blame it on. Well, if it's that way, if chaos is just the norm, because that's how it is, then there's no hope, is there? It's God's fault. He set up a system in which you can't win. That's what they're saying. And it's the same if you're just pointing across the generation gap. If it's somebody else's fault, then there's no hope because you can't fix that. You can't make anybody change. You're just stuck with whatever they do to you. And your life is ruined and there's no hope. But if we're guilty, then there is hope. Because if we're guilty, that means there's a standard and a standard maker. And it means we can be reconciled to Him. And then it can be fixed. So only with guilt is there any hope. So this morning I want to show you some of God's standards for the home. Because that's where the hope is. Because He set the system up. Because if we do what He says, it's really not that hard. It gets a lot easier, gets a lot better in a hurry. We've been studying the book of Colossians and a portion of it that deals with God's system of authority and submission. God created a world in which you cannot get away from that. It's impossible for you to have equal decision-making power with everybody else. And so God tells us how to live in this system for our good. Today we're going to look at instructions for children and for fathers. Colossians chapter 3, beginning with verse 18. Colossians 3, we'll read 18 through 21, because this is kind of the authority submission part of this. Wives, be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. Children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. Slaves, in all things, obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service, as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Now, God gives us instructions like these for our good. He's telling us how to live without hurting ourselves. He's telling us what to do so that we don't have to bear a lot of extra unnecessary pain. And if we trust Him, then we don't go through life thinking about ways to get around this stuff. We go through life thinking about how to apply this for our own benefit, seeking to obey Him. Now, we've already dealt with verses 18 and 19. The command in verse 20 is directed specifically at the little guys, children. Now, that could be anybody from infancy right on up to you're an adult, but you're not independent yet. And so you're still living at home, and you're still, in some sense, dependent on your parents financially, advice, anybody in that range. From birth right up on through college, if you're going and if you're getting help. God has specific things to say in His Bible to the littlest people in this room, and especially here. There's a way that you guys can live that is pleasing to God. There's a way that you can live that is not pleasing to God. And He puts some instructions in here to you because He cares about the little guys in this room. And so He can tell you how to live well. This is one of the places in Scripture where God addresses children especially. He understands your life. He understands what it's like to be a little person in a house where you don't decide everything. And where you have to wait for a long, long time to get those privileges that you would like to have. He understands what it's like to be under authority. He knows what your life is like. He's the one who set this plan up and made you little for as long as you'll be little. Why didn't it take a year to be big? He could have done it that way. Why doesn't it take 30 years to be big? He could have done it that way. It's His plan. It's His system. He knows what it is to be under someone else's authority and not big enough to do everything you want. He knows what it is to be grown and still submit. Because He was 12 when He went back and submitted to His parents' authority and waited until He was 30. So if you're in college and you're still dependent and you still live at home and it chafes you real bad when Dad says, look, you're going to live here, you're going to follow my rules. Well, deal with it. But He knows. He knows what's that. He knows what's that. What that's like. And here's what He has to say to you. In verse 20, children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Now, this is not just something to do. This is something to be. You are to be obedient. That's an attitude, a character trait. You know what it means. It means you do what they want, right? Even when they're not there, even when you could get out of it on a technicality because Dad wasn't careful enough in how he worded it, but you know what he wants, then it means you do what he wants. That's what it is to be obedient. It's easy to understand. You either do it or you don't, and most of the time you know if you're doing it or not. When I was out visiting my father-in-law about a week and a half ago, his house isn't childproof. We have a one-year-old. She turned one while they were out there. I go out, and, you know, there's just a lot of dangerous things. And she's crawling across the floor and reaching for one and not looking at me. And I said, Sarah, no. The daddy voice, you know. She stops. She looks. She sits down and bursts out crying, looking right at me, and put that lip out like only a little baby can do, you know. And Sharon just laughed, and she said, that's a real good sign that she understands. And it was. She's 1 year old, she can't walk, she can talk one word at a time, but no sentences. And she knows what it is to obey and whether or not she's doing it. We like to kid ourselves, don't we? I don't know. I didn't know that. Well, I don't know. Yeah, you know. If they're clear, you know. It's not hard to understand. And so when your parents are clear, you do what they want. That's what God says to do. Be be obedient to your parents. That does not mean that you don't also have to obey other grown-ups. Everybody has to do that. But when there's confusion, it's real easy for you. You go see what your parents want, and that's what you do. Not all grown-ups agree. You obey your parents. And if there's any confusion, God has made it really simple for you. Obey your parents. Ask them if you don't know. That's what God wants for you. Something for you to be. And it says that you're to be this in all things. Boy, now that's the hard part, isn't it? In all things. It means if you don't like it, it means if you don't agree, it means if you're not going to run your household that way, you obey your parents. You do what they want you to do. Now there's a promise here. It says, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. What do you think God's going to do for those he's well-pleased with? Did you know you could please the Lord? Did you know? God's really, really big. And we're really, really not. And yet you can please him. In Ephesians 6, it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment, with a promise, so that it may be well with you, and that you may live long on the earth. So whether you obey your parents is not just about how good they are at this. More than that, it's about what you believe about God and whether you'll obey him, because he's the one that set it up. He's the one that put you in this home and told you to obey these parents. This is about what you think about God, even as a little bitty person. If you're struggling with something that you don't like, understand that God has the power to change it. He could have made it work out a different way. He knows what he's doing, and you just ride it out and trust him. He didn't make any mistakes with you. He's handled a lot of lives before yours. He knows what he's doing. And so the question is whether you will obey God, little guys. Pretty simple stuff. The next command in this passage is to the fathers of these children who struggle with learning obedience and who struggle with the issue of trusting God, because that's the issue here. Verse 21 says, fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. This is a weighty responsibility. It is so easy to crush a small, developing heart. And so this is one of those negative commands. Dad, don't do that. The original Greek means don't provoke them to anger. Don't make them resentful. Don't irritate them. Don't exasperate them. Surprisingly easy for a father to do this with his children. You'll do this quickly if you're all disciplined and no tenderness. You'll do this quickly if you're all tenderness and no discipline. You'll do this if you fail to give clear commands. Children cannot obey what they do not know that you want. Now, some parents are very hesitant today to issue commands. They think that's harsh. That's not modern. That's not friendly enough. And so they suggest things to their children and they ask questions of their children. I want you to think about this. If children are commanded to obey their parents, does it not require then that parents have to tell them what to do? There has to be something to obey, Dad. They can't function without a clear signal. They cannot obey a suggestion, and they cannot obey a question. So let's say it's bedtime. And you want to say this to your children. Don't you think you ought to get ready for bed? Or, slightly more subtle, well, it's bedtime, get ready for bed, okay? Now you have asked a question, but you have not issued a command. And what you've indicated to this tiny little developing heart is that your ideas are up for negotiation. You're asking their opinion on whether bedtime is a good idea. Those are questions. You're inviting them to evaluate the question and reach their own conclusion, and you're provoking your child to wrath. Because eventually you're going to become furious that they haven't gone to bed. When you were the one who indicated to them that this was an optional issue. If you don't tell your children what to do, it's impossible for them to obey you. Now, it is possible to exasperate children by being overbearing, by acting like a military commander, by being a bully, but the solution to that is not to be so gentle they don't know what to do. If they're commanded to obey, then somebody has to issue a command that can be obeyed. And you can do that without being harsh, and you have to learn how. Now, you can exasperate children by giving, as you give commands, if you ignore the disobedience over and over and over and over and then come down hard on it. Because now you've taught them that this is something they can get away with if they just try hard enough. And this is why people spank and it doesn't work for them. They don't do it consistently enough. They don't do it every time. They don't expect one-time obedience. And so the child learns, hey, I got away with that 6 times, and then dad got really ticked off, but it's working for me. And if I can just get my technique down a little bit more, I can have my way all the time. And their little hearts just lose heart at you and the relationship because now you're just an ogre. You blow up at them because you wait till you're mad to do discipline. You exasperate your children if you're inconsistent, allowing something one day or for several days and then getting really upset at it. How do they know what to expect then? You exasperate your children if you will never admit to them when you are wrong. Some of the best advances we've made in our household is when I've humbled myself and gotten the kids together and said, kids, I was wrong. I need you to forgive me. Then they're ready to listen then. So if you've got some adjustments you have to make after reading this text today, then don't just go make all the new adjustments and expect the kids to figure it out. Sit down with the kids and say, you know, I've been making some mistakes and here's how it's going to change starting now because I want to obey God. Tell them why. And why is the biggest thing, Dad? You will exasperate your children if you fail to give them God as the reason they must obey you. All children are born sinful. All children rebel. Here's the big secret that none of the excuse makers want to realize. All of them are strong-willed. Especially the quiet, sneaky ones. You think the one that's bowing up at you and saying no is more strong-willed than the one that's saying yeah, yeah, and then sneaking around and doing it? They're all sinful. I was one of the sneaky ones, so you can't fool me without. I know. If you force your children to obey without pointing them to God as the reason they must obey, you know what they might conclude? It's because he's bigger than I am, but one day I'm going to be big, and then I'll have my way. And the sin in the heart is never challenged, and you'll raise a criminal. Don't try to convince your kids, especially your small kids, that this is a reasonable thing for them to do. That it's going to be more comfortable for them if they'll just... You know, a lot of people treat their children like a peer at work. They use the same logic on a kid that's 4 or 5 years old or 2 years old that they would use at work trying to convince their peers to get on the project and let's get this done. It doesn't work. Don't do it. Don't try to reason like that with small children. Say to them, you must obey me because God says so. He commanded you to do it, and I expect you to do it. Make clear to them that God is the standard and that you and they will both be judged by Him. And it's not just because you're bigger. Point them to God. That's what the passage that Mike read was talking about. You got to tell this to your children or they won't get it. You got to. Tell them that if they don't obey, you're going to obey. And spank them. Parents exasperate their children when they won't spank and when they spank inconsistently. Small children are very concrete in their thinking. Have you ever noticed this? I learned this when I was in college, and my cousin had a baby, and I go see that, you know, she'd gotten big enough to walk, but just talk a little bit. And she had this toy, and she's standing just out of reach. And I said, hey, let me see that toy. And I hold my hand out, and she goes. And I get all mad, you know, and then I realize, I mean, it's just where I just can't reach it. She's just waving it at me and grinning. And I realized what I had said. Let me see that toy. And I said, let me hold that toy. And she immediately put it in my hand. She was concrete. This is how children are. It's a developmental issue. Children are just, they're black, white. Yes, no. That's how God made them. And between the years about 7 and 10, they go through a change in which they can understand your logic. But the little guys can't get it. I mean, it's just like blah, 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 blah. They have no idea what you're talking about. If you doubt me, look at the jokes they read. Josh went through this phase and wanted to read jokes to us out of some book. I thought my head would explode. I'm like, that's not a joke. And Josh would just laugh, and he didn't know why he's laughing. He's trying to figure it out. It's a developmental issue. Small children cannot use a lot of conceptual thought yet. What they do understand is concrete ideas like right and wrong, and from infancy, God has put it in them to know that pain, punishment, and reward are the consequences of wrong and right. An infant understands that. That's why Sarah stopped when I said no, because she's been getting spankings for a long time. And so she heard no, and she knew. Be logical with your teenagers. Be concrete with your small children. It's yes and no. It's black and white. It's if you obey, I am pleased. If you disobey, I am displeased. And if you disobey, I must spank you to teach you to obey. Children, get that. This is the system that God set up. He created your children. He knows what works for them. And God has actually said, hear me, God has actually said, if you will not spank your children consistently, it's because you hate them. If you will not spank your children when they disobey, Dad, it's because you're being selfish. And you love your selfish comfort so much that you're willing to be hateful to your children. It's not their well-being you're thinking of when you won't spank. Proverbs 13:24 says, he who withholds the rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Small children understand something that doctors of psychology and modern parents often miss. They know the difference between loving correction and physical abuse. They know. They even understand the difference when the loving correction has to be pretty intense. Proverbs 20, verse 30, says, God says this, stripes that wound scour away evil, and strokes reach the innermost parts. Stripes that wound scour away evil, and strokes reach the innermost parts. Talking about the child. Now, the Lord keep us from defects. You be careful when you apply this, and who knows. But can stripes that wound be anything but a mark? We had one child that marked pretty easily. Everybody's skin's different. And we had to decide if we were going to leave a mark and make the price of the spanking high enough for her to get it. She also has the highest pain tolerance of any human I have ever known, so we got this, you know. You can't hurt her, and her skin marks easily. Now, So do we risk this and trust God and honor him, or do we just let her have her way? We loved her too much to let her have her way. So we left marks, and we chose our clothing accordingly. And we trusted God that if we honored him, he would keep us from those who don't understand or have rejected his ways. But that child loves us because God put it in her heart to know what loving correction is. And if it's absent, your children know something's wrong. You see children who are not content, who are very unhappy, who are striving, they know something's wrong. It makes it much harder for them to obey. Don't exasperate your kids, Dad. Don't do it. If they won't obey you, even especially when they're small, something's wrong with you, Dad. God puts the responsibility on you. And the ultimate question is whether you trust him or not. So here's my question to you. Are you looking to God regarding how your children should be raised? Or are you looking to the world? Or Christians who are just like the world, professing Christians who are just like the world? Raising children gets incredibly complicated when you get away from Scripture. Because it's not working, so they got to add more and more and more and more dimensions to it. It'll drive you crazy. But if you believe what God says, it's not that hard, and it works. The only hard part's dealing with your own character, being willing to be as relentless as little kids are. Stop some of that stuff early so it'll get easy. And then it gets easy. If the household's out of order, God says everybody's guilty. The good news in that, though, is that you can face it no matter what anybody else does. You can face up to it and have reconciliation no matter what anybody else does. Now, I know I don't look like it now, but I was once much smaller than you guys. And you know what my favorite part of being a little kid was? Well, one of my favorite parts, because it happened so much. It was when the spanking was over. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? I was one of those quiet ones that could get away with it, but my dad knew. And we lived in a small town, and everybody knew him. He was on the school board. Everybody knew him. And so before I could get home from doing wrong, somebody had called him. I learned about an omniscient God from my father standing at the door. And I'd come in, and I'd know I was busted already. So you got the guilt that comes when you did wrong. It just feels terrible, doesn't it? You know the spanking's coming. You know you're going to get caught. You got the fact that your dad's disappointed, and you hate that feeling. And you know it's going to hurt, and that's not any fun either. And you're mad at yourself sometimes because you knew better than to do it, and you don't even understand why you did it. And the best part of the whole thing was when the spanking was over, it was done forever. Was never going to come up again. We were done. That's why there's hope in this guilt, folks. Because in this guilt, we had a problem that we couldn't fix. No spanking could fix it. Nothing we could do could fix it. And so our gracious God fixed it by punishing all of our sins in his Son, Jesus Christ, on the cross. Jesus paid it all. It was paid in full. When he hung on that cross and said, "It is finished," it meant it was finished forever. All of the sins of everyone who would ever believe, all of them forgiven forever. They're never coming up again. The spanking's over. That's the hope that you only have if you face your guilt and deal with it. And then you can trust God's provision for your salvation. Then you can live as you should live. You can be a good dad. You can be a good kid. None of that's possible except because of what Jesus did on that cross. And so our being free of guilt starts with him and our believing what he did on that cross. It's the only way to get to heaven. And then when you've believed him and trusted what he provided for your salvation, then you can live well, you can be obedient, you can be a wise father, you can be everything he's called you to be.